Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
From a Christian perspective, St. Paul says that it's something that simply cannot be credibly denied. It can be, as Paul would say, suppressed in wickedness, but it cannot be denied the existence of God. It is written into creation, and the evidence for it, he says, is, well, he practically says it's self-evident. But what about all the arguments being made against the existence of God? Sometimes they amount to arguments for that God isn't necessary. That's usually the ones that are put forward as most sophisticated. Why posit a God when a God isn't necessary in this world? We have other means of talking about the origins of the world or of ourselves. Why do you need God? Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon. It's the 5th of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us to talk about the existence of God and classical arguments for it, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's a distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College. He's authored and edited more than 50 books, including Evidence for Faith, Deciding the God Question, and a forthcoming publication titled Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Do the now kind of growing bevy of those who deny the existence of God, the atheist crowd, do they have us over a barrel? Do they have us outwitted? Do they have the intellectual high ground in arguing against the existence of God?
Hardly. Dawkins is a good example or a poor example of this kind of thing, if you will. Dawkins argues that anybody who believes in creation and intelligent design is ignorant. Creationism is God's gift to the ignorant. But take a look at the kind of reasoning that he engages in. For example, to show that you don't need intelligent design, he developed what he calls a biomorph computer program. He introduced 9 genes, numbers 1 through 9, and then he mutates these by adding or subtracting one from one of these genes. And then he runs this procedure a number of times, and he produces litters of mutant offspring. In just a few dozen generations, there are a remarkable variety of shapes, looking like objects in the real world, flowers, insects, animals, lamps, aircraft, and so forth. And since this thing can continue to mutate, you could end up with 19 to the 9 possible developments, over 300 billion. And his argument is that this kind of thing simply takes place without the need for design, as in his view, the world came about that way, the blind watchmaker scenario. But think about it. How did this computer program arise? It arose because of Dawkins' use of his mental faculties to create the program. I mean, you can't just toss electronic elements out into the yard and expect them to produce this sort of thing. There isn't any high ground to atheism. Atheism is simply irrational. The fact of the matter is that if one doesn't believe in God, one believes in the absolute character of the world as we see it. And yet not one single thing in this world as we see it can explain itself. And since the world, the universe, is the sum total of all the stuff in it, and since no single thing can explain itself, the universe can't explain itself. And that requires an appeal beyond it to something that is self-explanatory, or someone who is self-explanatory, since there's evident design in this world. And that takes you directly to God.
So that would seem to be the answer that's often to the argument that's often put forward, and you summarized it there essentially with Dawkins' little variation, that, God isn't necessary. We don't need to intellectually posit the existence of God because we can explain things without him. You say, no, we can't.
Well, exactly. I mean, you've got to stop somewhere in trying to understand the world in which we find ourselves. You either stop with that world or you stop with a creator God. And the choice between these is perfectly straightforward. Anything in the world that we come across requires something else to explain it. It cannot explain itself. So if you insist that the world somehow does explain itself, you don't need a God, it somehow does explain itself, you are a myth maker. You are creating a mythological world, a world that doesn't accord with our own experience at all. Whereas the person who holds that the source of this world lies in God is being perfectly rational because God is self-explanatory and you don't have any reason to require an explanation for him. You do have a reason to require an explanation for the world in which you find yourself. You know, the irony of this is that people like Karl Marx said that God was an illusion, a projection. The fact is that the mythology lies on the side of the atheist. It's the atheist who is saying, well, the world looks contingent, smells contingent, tastes contingent, it doesn't seem to explain itself, but somehow it really does. It does explain itself to such an extent that we don't need to bring God into the picture at all.
Is it also the failure for the atheist debunkers of God to understand what it is when we mean when we talk about God? We really are talking about classical, something that even the ancient pagans understood better than the atheists do today, that we're really talking about a ground of being, a being that does not depend on anything else. Because they will often say, well, once you get to God, you have to explain his existence or his origin. Do they fail to understand that?
That's another illustration of their irrationality. Because if, let us say, we were to arrive at God, and he needs an explanation, that would mean we'd need a God to the second power to explain the God that we just mentioned. But that, in turn, would require a God to the third power, to the fourth power, and what you would end up with is an infinite regress. You would be regressing back to God to the nth power, which is simply the mathematical expression for an infinite series. But an infinite series has no end. And since it has no end, there's no God to the n minus 1, so there's no God to the n minus 2, there's none to the n minus 3, and you're going all the way back, there's no God to the third power, second power, or the God that you were talking about. So your discussion of an infinite series hasn't gotten you anywhere. You know, you might as well have been watching old Gomer Pyle reruns on television rather than messing around with this thing. You've got to stop this either with the universe or with God. And by the way, the multiverse business doesn't help you in the slightest. Even Anthony Flew, who became a deist, a believer in God shortly before his death, even he said that the multiverse was just an escape route that atheists were using to try to avoid the basic issues. The reason why multiverses don't help is that if there were an infinite number of possible universes, of which ours were only one, then they'd either be governed by the same laws that we know, and therefore we would have discovered them, which we haven't, or they're governed by totally different laws, in which case we could never know whether they existed or not. And if we don't know whether they existed or not, then we are certainly wasting our breath to talk about them.
With only about a minute and a half before we take our first break, Dr. Montgomery, could you summarize what you think is the strongest positive argument for the existence of God?
Well, I'd rather take that up after the break, because in my view, the strongest argument for God's existence is not the kind of philosophical arguments that are presented by William Lane Craig and other very distinguished Christian philosophers from Thomas Aquinas up to the present. The best and most important argument for God's existence is Jesus Christ. And one of the great things about Lutheran theology is that Lutheran theology makes Christ the center of everything, and our apologetic, our defense, should be centered on Jesus Christ. And in my view, that's where you ought to start in talking with non-Christians about the existence of God. Hardly anybody does this, because most people who engage in these arguments are either Roman Catholic or Calvinist. But if a person is a Lutheran, then the person's theology is Christ-centered, and it seems to me the person ought to see the implications of this for dealing with the God question.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll take up what he believes to be the strongest argument. It's not just an argument. It's actually a person that you have to contend with when it comes to that form of arguing for the existence of God, really showing and demonstrating the existence of God. Dr. Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He is also a distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College, author and editor of more than 50 books, including Evidence for Faith, Deciding the God Question, and a forthcoming publication titled Christ as Center and Circumference. You can find out more about Dr. Montgomery's books under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, more on the existence of God on this Thursday afternoon, July the 5th, with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and
Tobago. Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden,
Egypt,
France,
Turkey,
Japan,
Australia,
Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland,
Malaysia,
Singapore,
Bulgaria,
Korea,
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight deceit.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
It could be that at some earlier time, somewhere in the universe, a civilization evolved by probably some kind of Darwinian means to a very, very high level of technology. and designed a form of life that they seeded onto, perhaps this planet. Now, that is a possibility and intriguing.
Wait a second. Richard Dawkins thought intelligent design might be a legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Well, but that higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process.
So Professor Dawkins was not against intelligent design, just certain types of designers, such as God.
An excerpt from the documentary Expelled, featuring Ben Stein and Richard Dawkins. We're talking about the existence of God. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Dr. Montgomery, in about 5 days, you're going to be teaching at the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. Tell us about the Academy.
Well, this should make your listeners really feel miserable, because they could be here in Strasbourg for 2 weeks to sit under the teaching of four very, very fine apologists. They could be a group of 20, because we don't take more than that each summer. And for 2 weeks, nine intense mini-courses on the defense of the faith in areas such as philosophy, history, law, science, medicine, and a fine social program to go along with it. Our people will be coming in just a week, and we'll be having 2 weeks of absolutely marvelous instruction. The instruction being given by Chad Meister of Bethel College, also by Dr. Oliver Wilder Smith, who has two doctorates, one of them in medicine, and teaches at the University of Nijmegen in the Netherlands. He is the son of the great A.E. Wilder Smith, the intelligent design scientist who did books of great importance. This program is available every summer, and we strongly encourage listeners to Issues Etc. to consider the program and to sign up for it as early as possible, because only 20 people are able to participate. And there are generous scholarships available to assist the program. We have our brochure already available for 2013. The brochure is able to be seen on the website for the program, and that's www.apologeticsacademy, is one word, apologeticsacademy.eu, and these are being sent to people who have gone on the program in the past, and also to various institutions, and if anyone wants one, there's no problem in getting one physically sent. One simply contacts me at J.W. Montgomery at CompuServe.com. This program is the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Apologetics anywhere in the world, and with four instructors and 20 participants, there is a perfectly marvelous opportunity to get the basic arguments of the non-Christian down and to find the very best answers for them. The personal relationships between faculty and student are marvelous on the program.
Folks, you can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Before we get to that all-important argument you mentioned before the break, Dr. Montgomery, let's talk about a few things that you wanted to bring up. One of them was the laws of thermodynamics. How does that play into the issue of the existence of God?
Well, we were saying before the break that everything we come across in the universe is contingent. That is, it can't explain itself. It requires an explanation beyond itself. The second law of thermodynamics, which is fundamental to science and engineering, simply makes this point in regard to energy. It talks about the characteristics of energy in a closed system. A closed system is one where energy is not added from the outside, where the energy is within the system. And in any closed system, in a finite amount of time, the usefulness of the energy will diminish to point zero, to what we call heat death. The energy is still there because energy isn't created or destroyed within the system, but it doesn't have any more utility. It doesn't do anything. It's lying on its back on a surfboard and not accomplishing a single thing. Now, the atheist understands the universe that way. because there isn't any God to have created it, and no God adds energy from the outside. But in that kind of a universe, in a finite period of time, everything would have ground to a halt. Heat death would have arisen. Now, that's obviously not the case, since here we are discussing the question. We've got enough energy left to do that, at least. So the atheist's assumptions are wrong. Either the universe has come into existence a finite amount of time ago and hasn't yet had enough time to reach heat death, or there's a cosmic gas station attendant out there somewhere feeding energy in. You've either got to have a God who creates the universe, or you've got to have a continuous creation, which would require a transcendent source from outside. This is simply the illustration from energy of the fact that you can't explain things on their own ground. Energy is not self-explanatory.
So, to put as simply as possible, it's not only energy, but also in terms of information in the universe, things should be running down. And yet the evolutionist, with their godless explanation for these things, I mean, literally godless explanation, can they explain why in evolutionary biology things become more complex, things become more organized, to put it simply, more information is created out of a lack of information?
Well, before I deal with that, actually, if the atheist were right, the universe would have already run down. Why? Because for the atheist, the universe has been around forever. It never was created, right? But all finite periods of time fall into an infinite period of time. So if the universe were in fact infinite, it would already have run down because it takes only a finite period of time to reach heat death in a closed system. And that system is closed because there isn't anything outside of it. Okay? Well, as far as evolution is concerned and complexity, the logical howler in the entire evolutionary understanding is the notion that given enough time, you're going to arrive at greater complexity. Now, the fact of the matter is that time is not a causal factor at all. Time simply is a record of change. Or, if you take it in the Einsteinian sense, as one must, it still does not cause particular things to happen. There is no built-in causal consideration in the nature of time. So when the evolutionary biologist says, given enough time, you will have changes in biological phenomena moving in the direction of greater complexity, that is nothing but wishful thinking. It is word magic. It's investing time with an ability that time simply does not have. The scientist, in general, is not very sophisticated when it comes to semantics and philosophical considerations. You ask a scientist, well, why do the swallows go back to Capistrano practically the same day each year? Why do the storks, the Cigon, why do they come back to the Alsace here on just about the same day each spring? And he says, instinct. Now, has that explained anything? Not in the slightest. He's just given a word to a phenomenon that he doesn't understand. He hasn't been able to explain it. And the evolutionary biologist uses time in that same sense. He also uses the word mutation. What is mutation? Mutation is a change for which we have no explanation whatsoever. And when the evolutionary biologist sees something happen that he cannot explain, and it appears to provide something more complex than he had seen before, then he says, ah, mutation. But that's no explanation whatsoever. It's simply irrational to think that you can attach a word to something, and by doing this, you've explained it.
So from an apologetic standpoint, with only about a minute here before our break, Dr. Montgomery, when we hear those words like given enough time or mutation or by some process, sometimes it's just that general, those ought to serve as red flags for us that we're being, or at least they're trying to bamboozle us.
Yes, yes, the technical term, I believe, is conning. This is a piece of intellectual conning. And and you know, also, the fact that you can line things up and show that something was less complex earlier and more complex later doesn't mean that the first changed into the second. That's the old medieval logical fallacy of post hoc ergo propter hoc. That is to say, just because two things have some temporal relationship to each other, one is somehow causing the other. The medieval logicians used the analogy of clocks. They said, if two clocks chime the hour at the same time, does that mean one of them caused the other to chime? Of course not.
Dr. John Warren Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the existence of God. It's Thursday afternoon, the 5th of July. He is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He has authored and edited more than 50 books, including Evidence for Faith, Deciding the God Question, and a forthcoming publication titled Christ as Center and Circumference. More with Dr. Montgomery after the break. Join Issues Etc. regular guest Gene Edward Veith, Stephen Hine, and me for the Conference on Classical and Lutheran Education, July 17th through the 19th at Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas. Topics include teaching Latin, music, history, literature, the catechism, and more. Visit ccle.org for more information. The Conference on Classical and Lutheran Education, July 17th through the 19th in Houston, Texas, ccle.org.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Sophisticated Lutheran Apologetics. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Extended waiting period could save lives.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Utah has become the second state to extend a woman's waiting period for abortion from 24 to 72 hours. A spokesman for Governor Gary Herbert, who signed the bill, said he believes it allows a woman to fully weigh her options and the implications of such a grave decision. A number of states have passed various requirements in the interest of women making a more informed decision. In neighboring Idaho, lawmakers are considering an ultrasound law. South Dakota was the first state to extend the waiting period, but a judge has preliminarily blocked implementation of the law.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
You don't have to be dogmatic to reject that Zeus or Apollo or any of the other dead gods. I mean, we all reject these gods. We don't have to prove their absence. I mean, this is one of the fallacies of religious argumentation, the idea that the atheist has to prove the absence of God. Nobody's proved the absence of Zeus. And yet everyone's behaving as though the God of Abraham has a completely different status than these thousands of other dead gods. And he frankly doesn't.
It's new atheist Sam Harris. He's author of the books End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation, making his argument. Well, he's not making an argument against God. He's just saying, I don't have to, I think. We're talking about the existence of God. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Dr. Montgomery, before the break, you were talking about some of the fundamental logical fallacies, not only made but often put forth by those who posit a universe without God. It sounds like many scientists might benefit from a simple course in logic and formal and informal fallacies.
Well, there's no doubt about this. You know, there's another example of this that's very striking. It was set forth in the work Darwin's Black Box by Michael Behe a few years ago. Behe relied upon an illustration and a discussion in VIT, V-O-E-T of VIT, his work on biochemistry in 1995. If you go back to the very earliest biological forms, if you go back to bacteria, let's say, and you examine the flagellum of the bacterium, that's the sort of propeller mechanism that the bacteria uses when it does the backstroke or whatever bacteria do when we're not looking. In any case, this is analyzed by Zitt and his co-author as a engineering phenomenon. There is a diagram, and it's reproduced in Darwin's Black Box by Behe, and there the various elements of this propeller mechanism are described as bushings, universal joints, filaments, stators, studs, C-rings, S-rings, M-rings, rotors, and so forth. Now, why do they so describe this? Because the mechanism is so complex that if you came across anything like this other than in the biological realm, you would insist that this was the product of engineering. Now, the fascinating thing about this is that this is at the very beginning of biological phenomena. There has been no time to develop anything. Now, you might want to argue that the great big horse ridden by Tonto or the Lone Ranger comes from Aeohippus, a little tiny horse earlier. But how can you argue that the engineering phenomenon with the flagellum of the bacterium derives from anything or has naturally developed? This is the starting point of biological development, and already there is this incredible complexity, the necessity of appealing to intelligent design.
You're talking about what's called irreducible complexity, a complexity that where the parts can't evolve apart from one another with any meaningful purpose, except for the one that they demonstrate in the kind of end result, right?
Well, yes, but I'm also pointing out that there is nothing earlier than this into which or by which this could have developed. This happens to be the earliest biological phenomena that we were able to come across. Viruses have some similar characteristics of this. And and if you don't have any time whatsoever, if you have no opportunity for development and no way of prior explanation, if you are dealing with the beginnings of biological existence, and you already have this kind of, as you put it, irreducible complexity, then surely the only proper inference is that there is intelligence as the explanation of it. This also is what drives me crazy when people say, well, you can't present intelligent design in the schools because this is a religious matter and all we want to do is to stick to science. Listen, what we've got here are two competing ways of understanding our world. And both of these ways should be presented in the public schools, and the reasons for them. And if reasons are provided, it becomes perfectly evident that only the intelligent design explanation is able to account for the phenomena. And therefore, that is the kind of explanation that ought to be appealed to intellectually and scientifically.
So it sounds like, the in terms of just basic biology, not evolutionary biology, but basic biology, like of cells, the more we learn about the things, the more difficult it becomes for those who posit an evolutionary origin to them to explain the things themselves.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's precisely the point. And, you know, this can be illustrated in any number of different ways. For example, there was a very, very interesting dialogue that took place some years ago between Karl Popper, the political philosopher and epistemologist, and Sir John Eccles, who had received a Nobel Prize in the area of biology. And this dialogue, a very extensive dialogue, was published under the title The Self and Its Brain. The Self and Its Brain. The title is very interesting because the conclusion that they reach is that the self, the person, can't be explained by the characteristics of the brain. The self so transcends the brain that it is not able to be reduced to it. And Eccles makes this even more strongly than Popper, and with a great deal of scientific acumen. He says, if the uniqueness of myself were tied to the genetic uniqueness that built my brain, the odds against myself ever existing would be 10 to the 10,000th against. Why? Because the complexity of the brain is not able to reach the uniqueness of each individual person. There are only, 30,000 genes, so, you know, there's a chance of 10 to the 10,000 against that uniqueness being achieved. This is just another way of saying that personhood, human personhood, can't be explained on the basis of itself. It requires an appeal beyond it. This is another way of arguing for dualism, that the fact is that, you know, we are more than our bodies, and we are more than our brains.
Can those who posit a universe without the existence of God, can they make any rational statements about morality?
None whatsoever, because morality has to be absolute. You can't have a situation where killing is okay on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but not okay on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And you, in the area of human rights, you have to talk about inalienable rights, rights that can't be taken away, must not be taken away from people, and they don't even have the right to take those away from themselves. But the only way to get absolutes is from an absolute source. And if you are an atheist, you don't have any absolutes. The world is entirely relative. There's no way in the world to build up an understanding of moral values which would apply everywhere and under all conditions. So when you see book titles like The Morality of Atheism, there are several books that try to argue that there is somehow the possibility of an ethic, even though you're an atheist. This is all nonsense. Any atheist is going to be subject to the cultural and sociological conditions of his time or of his own personal background and is not in any way going to be able to rise to the level of absolutes. So, you know, these people are dangerous. They are highly dangerous. A society that doesn't have any absolute foundations is a society where anything goes, and political pressures are going to determine the morality that society exercises.
Are there historical examples of atheism writ large across societies where it is proven that moral absolutes disappear, or when the state, I'm asking, becomes the arbiter of morality? With
disasters? Oh, sure. I did a book some years ago on the Marxist view of human rights. And this is really interesting because when I was director of studies at the International Institute of Human Rights, we had Marxists who came and gave lectures. And I got to know a couple of them very, very well. And these fellows tried to present the glories of Marxism, saying that Marxism would eliminate the class system and provide a higher level of morality in society because there would not be the ownership of the means of production in the hands of certain people and not in others, and so on. And the fact of the matter is that there has been no philosophy in modern times that has caused more misery, more violations of human rights, more exterminations of peoples than Marxism. And why were they able to do this? Because in Marxism, there were no absolutes. The end justified the means. The party could get away with anything. The end result was that more people were murdered under Stalin than even under Hitler.
And that was a consistent view. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. If consistent with itself, with its own philosophical beliefs, atheism cannot provide a ground for anything, not only for the existence of man or the universe, much less the existence of morality or law or rights, which makes it a very, very dangerous way of viewing the world. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the existence of God. Stay tuned.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage-lcms.org.
Why didn't Lutherans abandon many of the worship practices of the medieval Roman Catholic Church? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Faith and Act, The Survival of Medieval Ceremonies in the Lutheran Reformation. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Faith and Act at issuesetc.org. Faith and Act, The Survival of Medieval Ceremonies in the Lutheran Reformation.
I find no evidence from the methods of science for the existence of God. And if there is no evidence for the existence of things, then I, as a scientist, conclude that it does not exist.
It's Nobel Prize winner Dr. Paul Boyer, professor of biochemistry at UCLA. We're talking about the existence of God. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Folks, here's a way that you can help us defend the faith and teach the truth. If you're a member of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, you can go to our website, and there's a program that they have called Thrivent Choice. What it allows you to do is designate your charitable dollars through Thrivent toward Issues Etc. through Lutheran Public Radio. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click donate. There is the Thrivent Financial for Lutherans logo. Click on that and fill in the proper fields. Remember, to designate money for Issues, etc., you need to designate money for Lutheran Public Radio. Lutheran Public Radio produces Issues, etc. Thanks to everybody who's done this so far. It's a great source of a regular income for Issues, etc., and all those members of Thrivent have been very, very helpful in the past. Dr. Montgomery, you have actually made these arguments, not in a vacuum or not simply on our airwaves, but you've made these arguments to atheists as well. How has it been received?
Well, it's very interesting. The fact is that the atheist wants to appear to be the only rational person around, and it is a standard operating procedure to present make it seem as if the views of the other person do not depend upon evidence, that the views of the religious person are simply a matter of opinion. And there's an interesting example of this. Dawkins did a letter to his 10-year-old daughter some years ago, and this was published, and it contains the following final paragraph. "It is not easy for you to do anything because you are only 10 years of age, but you could try this. Next time somebody tells you something that sounds important, think to yourself, is this the kind of thing that people probably know because of evidence? Or is it the kind of thing that people only believe because of tradition, authority, or revelation? And next time somebody tells you that something is true, why not say to them, what kind of evidence is there for that? And if they can't give you a good answer, I hope you'll think very carefully before you believe a word they say." Unquote. Now, this is a very, very good piece of advice for a 10-year-old or for a 70-year-old. Don't believe things without evidence. But notice that it assumes that if a person is making any religious statements, they're making them because of what Dawkins called tradition, authority, or revelation. But just suppose that there is such solid evidence for revelation that this would bring us to God's existence and bring us to a religious commitment. Then surely we ought to go in that direction. What I've tried to do with atheists is to point out to them that we are the last people to be suspicious of evidence. We are just the opposite. We have the evidence on the side of Christian faith. In the New Testament, Peter says, "We have not followed cunningly devised fables." The Greek word there is muthoi, myths. "When we made known to you the power and coming of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, we were eyewitnesses of his majesty." Unquote. The evidence for Christian faith is solid, and we don't want to give the atheist the impression that we became believers because we had a mystical experience at 3 o'clock in the morning after eating too much Wiener Schnitzel. We want them to understand that we have become Christian because that's the truth, and the truth can be backed up and supported.
So you're saying that there's an evidential, factual foundation for what is presented in the New Testament regarding Jesus Christ. Take us through that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why at the very beginning of the program I said that in my view, when you're dealing with an atheist, you don't start out with most of the things that we've been dealing with on this program. You don't start out with philosophy and science and biology contingency and that sort of thing. What you do is say something like this. You're wondering about God. Why don't I show him to you? Atheists will say, "What under the sun can you possibly mean?" You say, "Well, there is solid historical evidence that God became man in Jesus Christ and gave such evidence for himself that the people who had contact with this evidence had no choice but to come to faith in him. They believed because they were overwhelmed by the facticity of who he was and what he did. And we have eyewitnesses who have recorded the contacts that they had." If you are serious as an atheist in wanting to find out whether there is a God, I want you to sit down here with me, and I want you to look at these documentary records. We want to talk about these. We want to see whether they are as solid as they appear to be. And we want to see what the implications are if these documents are good and if the testimony is good. And we're principally going to look at this issue of all of the prophecies through centuries that came to fulfillment in the life of this particular man, showing that he was more than an ordinary human being. And we're going to see that he predicted that he would die and that he would conquer death, rise again on the third day, and that that gift of eternal life would be available to anybody who believes in him. Okay? You see the line along which I'm moving. What I'm trying to do is to show the atheist not an abstract first cause. I want to show the atheist the personal presence of God in history in a way that God can do something for that atheist. You know, there are two kinds of definition. There is there is denotative definition and descriptive definition. There's the dictionary descriptive definition, and that's what the atheist expects of us. He expects us to define God as the infinite, absolute, omniscient, omnipotent source of all being or something of this kind. And the minute we do this, he will want definitions of all the words we've used in our definition, and we'll be wound up in a semantic mess forever. There is also, however, denotative definition. That's where you point to the thing and you say, that's what I'm talking about, and then the burden of proof shifts to the other person to figure out how he wants to describe it or define it. And the Christian faith is the only religion where you don't engage in abstract analysis of what is meant by the concept of God, but where you take a person right up to Jesus Christ and say, that's what I'm talking about, and you need to face him just as I have faced him, and that gives you your God, and it gives you the answer for eternity.
With only about a minute or so here, Dr. Montgomery, it strikes me that the atheist can spend a lot of time avoiding that question. He can spend a lot of time distracting himself and others from that very person, from Jesus Christ himself, God in flesh, demonstrated to be God. Do you think that a lot of the foam and the fervor that the atheists produce nowadays is precisely that, simply trying to distract themselves and others from that person, Jesus Christ?
Well, it depends on the atheist. There certainly are people of atheistic background who are searching. And Anthony Flew is an example of this because he was able to move beyond atheism at least to a deistic view of God. It depends on the atheist. There certainly are a lot of people within the atheistic community who are not willing to face the evidence. And so they throw up the smokescreen to make it seem as if the problem lies with the with the believers, whereas it really lies with them. And why is it? Why is that the case? Well, somebody has said that Christianity is the easiest and the hardest religion of all. It is the easiest because God has done everything for us. There's nothing that we can do to save ourselves. But it's the hardest because you've got to admit that you needed it that badly and that you couldn't save yourself. And I get the interesting impression that with a certain number of atheists, they don't want to find God because if they did, then he would be the controlling element in their lives, and they want to control their lives themselves. They want to be their own God. Of course, if you want to be your own God, then there's nothing more disturbing than to have a higher or greater God turn up. It's important in talking with an atheist to analyze why, really, this person doesn't believe in God and what would convince him. I often ask the atheist, I say, well, what would convince you? And if he is unwilling to say that anything would convince him, then, of course, you're wasting your time to try to argue with him. Then you scare the hell out of him on the basis of scripture passages such as the day will come when every knee will bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. He's going to face God. There's no question about that. It's just an issue of whether he's going to face God now when it can do him some good or later when it isn't going to do him any good.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Evidence for Faith, Deciding the God Question, and a forthcoming publication titled Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, thanks for being our guest.
Always a pleasure.
Folks, here's what Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Will Wheaton had to say about the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Faith and Act, the Survival of Medieval Ceremonies in the Lutheran Reformation. Pastor Wheaton says, I heartily recommend the book to any and all who love the Lutheran liturgy and seek to become better acquainted with its formative development in the time of the great church orders. You know, the reformers in the 16th century did not junk everything that came before them, especially in matters of worship. In fact, they kept most of it and they built upon it. And that's what the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Faith and Act, is all about. Find out about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for Faith and Act, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the faith, teaching the truth. Issues Etc.